Do you think it's appropriate to put a Ten Commandments monument in front of a public building? Do you think it's appropriate to put the Lord's Prayer up on the wall of a public school? Well, that's fine, and I understand many people feel very strongly about such things. But if you do, then you need to know something, and that is that the Constitution of the United States, the First Amendment specifically, requires at the very least that government be neutral between various religious beliefs. And if you favor one religion over another, you may violate that provision. That means you have to tolerate religious beliefs that maybe you're uncomfortable with. Now think quickly. What's the most objectionable religious belief you can think of? Oh yes, that would be Satanism. And that's what we're going to talk about today. It's your Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and it's all about the Satanic Temple.
Your Weekly Constitutional is produced in partnership with the Robert H. Smith Center for the Constitution at James Madison's Montpelier. Your host is Professor of Constitutional Law, Stuart Harris.
About 30 years ago, when I was in law school, I was learning about something called the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. You know that part. It's one that says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. It's often cited as the part of the Constitution that mandates some sort of separation between church and state. Well, it's not quite that clear. You see, the country as a whole and the Supreme Court as a specific example of a governmental institution, we've never come to a consensus on what that clause means or how we should test, how we should evaluate cases when someone says, hey, wait a second, the government is getting too involved with religious matters. There are a number of different tests, but when I was in law school, I learned that one new test had just come out, and the idea was neutrality. Justice O'Connor and later the entire court seemed to embrace the idea that, yes, government can be involved with religion. For example, government can have holiday displays around Christmas time or do other things that involve religion, as long as government stays neutral. That is, it can't favor Protestantism versus Catholicism, and it can't even favor religion versus non-religion. The idea is that an impartial observer seeing a governmental display or witnessing a governmental act would not be made to feel like he or she is a second-class citizen. You follow me? That sounds great, doesn't it? Neutral. We treat everybody the same. But if that's the concept, then what happens when a religious group shows up that's so far outside of the mainstream that people are really and truly offended by their message? Well, it took a while. But such a group has shown up, and forgive me if I seem a little bit amused, but this group is specifically designed to get under people's skin, and by golly, they're doing a good job of it. My interview guest today is a fellow by the name of Lucian Greaves, and he runs an organization called, wait for it, the Satanic Temple. Yep, you guessed it. These are Satan worshipers, or people in some sense who follow the dictates of their concept of Satan, and they want to come to a public school near you. In fact, if you're a regular listener to the show, you'll remember from last spring that we actually did two different episodes on the efforts of the Satanic Temple to place a monument to Baphomet, that's a different name for Lucifer or Satan, on the statehouse steps in Oklahoma right next to a Ten Commandments monument. Now, that case is ongoing, but since last spring, they've been doing lots of other things as well. So I was so interested by my previous interviews and so interested in the subsequent activities of the Satanic Temple that I called up the leader of the temple, Lucian Greaves, and I asked him for a Satan update. Well, Lucian Greaves, welcome back to your Weekly Constitutional.
Thank you. It's an honor to be back.
Well, it's an honor to have you back. And I understand that you're actually coming to us live from a conference, someplace called Skepticon. What in the world is that?
Skepticon is an annual conference. I believe it's always held in Missouri. And it's for skeptics, atheists, secularists, humanists. And they've invited me to speak.
Is that because Missouri is the show me state?
Perhaps.
If it's always in Missouri, then I bet there's a connection there, but please go on. You were saying?
Well, I believe I was invited from in regards to a lot of the headway the Satanic Temple has made in the fight for church-state separation and secularism, and the atheist secularist groups are starting to recognize now how the satanic support is helpful in that cause.
Well, I must say that you have been a very busy demon worshiper, and I realize that's a bit inaccurate of a statement. You've been a very busy man, and of course, the initial discussion we had was about the controversy over the Baphomet statue and in front of the Oklahoma Capitol. Could you tell us what's the latest development with that controversy?
Well, in the news recently, we heard that some disturbed man ran over the Ten Commandments monument, ran his car into it, got out, urinated on it, and then started ranting and raving about killing Obama and other bizarre things. And clearly he was deranged, he was disturbed, but original reports were saying that this man was a Satanist and that he had done that for that reason. It turns out he was a devout Christian off of his medication who is really saying that Satan made him do this. So now we have a situation where the Ten Commandments is not standing in Oklahoma. We only wanted our monument standing in Oklahoma next to the Ten Commandments. Don't want it there if it's not there. Nonetheless, we're moving forward with the construction of the monument, and we're moving forward with drawing up our legal suit against Oklahoma for a de facto rejection of our request to put the monument there, on the grounds that they've never responded to our request at all. So that's the situation we're in now. I was just in Florida before.
And wait. Before we go on now fess up, Lucian. Did you and your minions cast a spell and make him do it? Come on, did you cast a spell?
It does not benefit us at all. And we actually released a statement right away saying that we found that act of vandalism to be deplorable. And we don't want anybody to go about things this way. We know how that feels, even though that hasn't happened to us yet. We've gotten nothing but threats against our monument, people claiming that they're going to pull it down, use chains on their truck or whatever, run it down or whatever. So it is kind of funny to see that this happens in advance of our monument going up and somebody crashes into the Ten Commandments already. But we don't want to see that happen. We're fighting this on a legitimate level. We're fighting this in the courts, and we don't want people resorting to these ad hoc little insults and acts of violence like that.
Is the state of Oklahoma going to replace the Ten Commandments monument?
They stated immediately, the governor stated immediately, that she herself was going to help round up the private funding to put the monument back in place. And they say they're dedicated to putting the Ten Commandments back up. But it sets an interesting scenario for them because they had what they were calling a moratorium on monuments going up while the ACLU case was still being fought against the Ten Commandments being placed there. And so now that the Ten Commandments has fallen in the course of this moratorium, and while they're using that probably as their justification for ignoring us, though they haven't said that directly, they haven't acknowledged our request, it'll be interesting to see how they would justify putting the Ten Commandments back up without reckoning with our request. But as I said, we're going to file suit and compel that along. So we can only see how it plays out. But what I was saying about being in Florida before Skepticon was that I was overseeing the completion of the monument.
Oh, okay.
It's almost entirely completed. The finishing touches are the finishing on the brass, the actual cast of it, the sculpture was put together in New York and is cast and being put together in Florida. And in fact, maybe later today, maybe before the end of the day today, we will see a piece on Vice because Vice, the news outlet, came with me to look at the monument being completed, and they're going to release a bunch of images of it. And I think that'll generate a lot of news again because people will see that this legal battle is surely going to be taking place now. And I think the monument is such a work of art as well. And that alongside of what it symbolizes is going to make it a very iconic image, I think, for the rest of our lives.
I must say that the photos that you've posted on the Satanic Temple's Facebook page are remarkable. Now, is that the near finished monument that's pictured there?
Well, that's the finished sculpture. Actually, the sculpture itself, I forget the materials it's made from, but that was not bronze. But that's ultimately what it will look like in bronze. but that's what it was cast from. And what's remarkable in this casting process is that original sculpture is then destroyed in that casting the mold process. So there's kind of these chunks of the original monument all strewn about in Florida that we were seeing. So that's destroyed, and then the bronze one takes its place.
So that's a facsimile, but we've yet to see Baphomet in all of his glory.
Right. We've never seen it on its pedestal with the stone slab behind it. And I think that all those elements drawn together in the brass, which has a different color, of course, a whole different veneer to it, it just looks so imposing and such a remarkable work of art. We couldn't have asked for any better. It's very moving when you see it, especially if you're in my position where you've been justifying this in the course of a year and fighting this battle as you go along to see it come to fruition like this.
Okay, so then the next step is your lawsuit, and you all are preparing to file that.
Correct, but maybe today, even still, there's still some hours left in the day. The Americans United for the Separation of Church and State may be filing a lawsuit against Florida on our behalf, because Florida has also refused to acknowledge our application to set a holiday display in the Capitol Rotunda, where a nativity scene and other religious displays are going to be placed. They rejected us last year and said our display was grossly offensive for the holidays. None of us could understand what was grossly offensive. The Department of Management Services refused to answer as to what exactly was grossly offensive, as it's not really their place to judge strictly on viewpoint discrimination. But this year we came back, and Americans United for the Separation of Church and State is representing us. They had given the state of Florida the ultimatum of answering our request by the 14th, which was last Friday, a week ago. And since Florida didn't acknowledge even American United's follow-up requests for acknowledgement of this, Americans United this week has been drawing up suit. And I think it should be ready to be delivered, if not today, then Monday.
Well, I don't want to get too down in the weeds over legal strategy, but it occurs to me that you might be able to get a temporary restraining order, a TRO, some sort of injunction, because courts tend to take these First Amendment cases extremely seriously. In fact, there's an old adage that when a request like yours has been denied, when there's a pending request and the government's not allowing someone to speak, that every minute that goes by constitutes a new violation of the First Amendment. So I'm anticipating you guys are going to be fairly aggressive in your pursuit of your lawsuit, and you're going to try to get some sort of resolution before the holidays?
Yes, you're absolutely right. And that's what I was going to say. That's part of it. Not only is it a First Amendment case reflecting on our ability to engage in free speech, but time is so limited. This is something strictly for the holidays. And last year when we were rejected, we reached out to the ACLU and we thought we'd have a case after the fact. But after the fact, we really didn't. There was no relief we could get. The event was pretty much over. And Americans United is dedicated to not letting time just tick by, as I think Florida hopes it will. And maybe that's part of their strategy of not replying to us at all. They certainly didn't send a denial, but they haven't said anything. So running down the clock works in their favor. And I think Americans United is fully aware of that.
So I guess there might be some sort of news coming out of Florida relatively soon. But wait, Florida, I thought that the governor, that Rick Scott, was your buddy.
Right. Well, when we first did a rally in his support, I have to admit to you, that wasn't really so much in his support. It was really to show the unintended consequences, perhaps, of what he was doing, taking it at face value as we did. And he put forward a Senate bill that essentially allowed for prayer in school. So we staged a rally in his support. But I make no bones about it. I don't think highly of Rick Scott, and I find it remarkable that he was reelected into office this time around. But now we're getting really political.
Well, I was just curious because I seem to recall that last year you all had a rally with two signs, and one of them said, "Hail Satan," and the other said, "Hail Rick Scott."
Right.
It's Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and I'm speaking with Lucian Greaves of the Satanic Temple. Yep, you heard me right. I'm talking with the devil's minions. After the break, we'll have our constitutional quiz, and then we'll come back and we'll speak more with Lucian about the devil and the Establishment Clause. Stay tuned. I'm very excited because I'm looking across the studio and there he sits with his headphones on, smiling at me in his Cheshire Cat sort of way. What do you have for us today, Doug Smith?
You know, Stuart, it's always great to see you.
It's always great to see you.
I have a quiz today.
A quiz?
It's a real stumper.
A stumper.
All right. It's a real stumper.
Oh, boy. Well, I hope we have a smart contestant. Do we have a contestant on the line?
Yes.
Well, who is this?
My name is Adam.
Where are you from, Adam?
Chesterfield County, Virginia.
Chesterfield County, Virginia. Well, I've heard Chesterfield County has a lot of very smart people. Are you one of them?
I hope so.
Are you ready for a real stumper?
I am.
All right. Quiz guy, you're up.
All right, Adam. Here we go. I'm going to read the question and give you four choices. Who literally wrote the Constitution?
Oh, man.
Is it A, Ben Franklin, B, Jacob Shallus, C, John Hancock, or D, Herbie Hancock?
Who literally wrote the Constitution? Do you want to define that any further?
Who literally wrote
So actually put quill pen to paper.
Pen to paper.
Okay. And what are the choices again? Because this one's stumping me.
This is A, Ben Franklin, B, Jacob Shallus, C, John Hancock, or D, Herbie Hancock. Wiki, 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 wiki.
Did you get all those, Adam?
I did.
We're looking for the scribe here.
Yeah. Well, I know that you all like to go through every answer one at a time. So I'm going to say A is wrong.
Why is Ben Franklin wrong?
Well, I know Ben Franklin had a lot to do with the Constitution, but he was way up in age at that point, and so I doubt they would let him write it.
Adam sounds like he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
B was, I'll come back to B.
You'll come back? He's even adding a little bit of suspense here. Tremendous. Go on.
C, that was...
John Hancock.
John Hancock, right?
Are you heading over? Are you heading overseas?
No. I'm saying, I can't remember what C was.
Oh, yeah. It's John Hancock.
I'm going to say that's wrong. He was the president of the convention that, you know, came out with the Declaration of Independence. So, man,
I thought you had him there, Doug, but go on.
Almost. D just seems like the answer that you're trying to stump me with, just because it has the same last name. So
not Herbie, Hancock.
So I'm not going to say D either. So using the process of elimination, I'm going to go with B.
That's right. B, Jacob Shallus.
Well done, Adam.
Impeccable
process of elimination. do you know anything about this guy, or is it just the one you came up with after you eliminated the other ones?
I don't know much about him. I want to say that I had, you know, the process of elimination helped me, like, pick that answer, but I had a little hunch, but a very small one, that was the right answer.
Tremendous. Well, what do we know about Jacob Shallus?
Well, it's interesting. Adam, you nailed it. That was great, because that was a stumper. In fact, it stumped a lot of people for a long time, because his name is nowhere on the document. He's the guy who literally put pen to paper. He really wasn't part of the convention. He was just the engrosser. He was the penman. And he got, you know, you ready for this? He got paid
$30.
$30. $30 to write one of the most important documents on the face of the planet. Cool. And today you can see Jacob Shallus's hand at the National Archives in Washington, D.C., that is the version that is on display.
You're not talking about like in formaldehyde. They didn't preserve his hand there. No.
They didn't.
Oh, now you were talking literally before, but now you're speaking metaphorically.
That's very Russian of you. No, we don't do that in this country.
That would be kind of cool. I'd go see that.
He was the son of German immigrants, and he just happened to be the deputy clerk, the assistant clerk of the Pennsylvania General Assembly. And so it was very expedient. They kind of turned around and said, well, who's going to write this thing out? Who's got a pretty good hand? Ah, Jacob Shouse.
Well, that was a stumper, Doug, but Adam, you just blew it away. So not only are you going to get a constitution from James Madison's Montpelier, you are going to get a Your Weekly Constitutional t-shirt. And all you need to do to get that is to send an email to us at ywc@montpelier.org. Give us your snail mail address, give us your shirt size, and it will be rocketing on its way to you before you can say Montpelier.
And I will wear it with pride.
And you will wear it with pride.
That's right. That's right.
Well, thank you, Adam, and thank you, Doug.
You bet. It's the Constitution. Yeah. I read it for the articles.
The devil is about to visit Florida this Christmas. It's a satanic...
But if religious monuments are allowed in state capitol buildings, shouldn't that extend to all types of religious beliefs? Even Satanism? So if you think that Satanism doesn't have a place in a government building near you, then everything you know is wrong.
And a satanic temple member says the state government brought this upon itself because putting up the Ten Commandments in the first place makes a religion.
If the government can't say you're a good religion, you're a bad religion.
The satanists are anti-Christian. That's how this whole movement started with the
most evil.
Not a good role model.
They should be able to put the statue up, and then they should be shot right next to it, and then we take it down.
Absolutely a mockery and ridiculous.
Absolutely not mockery, not ridiculous. You may not like the Satanists. Guess what? That doesn't matter.
Do you?
Everybody is equal.
Do
I don't care. All religions
so
are the same.
So you think it's perfectly fine to put a satanic, whatever message they're going to have up there, and
it's
an interactive display for children, by the way.
It's not okay to put any of it up there, but it is more not okay to favor one over another.
All religions are none.
No, because it's against another religion.
Happy holidays from the Satanic Temple.
Nice to meet you. Hope you guess my name. Oh, yeah. But what's confusing you is just the nature of my game.
You're listening to Your Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and I'm speaking with Lucian Greaves of the Satanic Temple. Yeah, you heard me right, the Satanic Temple. Lucian and his group have made it their business to enforce the Constitution, or I should say the Establishment Clause of the Constitution, specifically the idea that's been around about 30 years that if the Establishment Clause requires anything, it requires government to be neutral between various religions. Recently, Governor Rick Scott of Florida announced that he was going to champion the cause of prayer in schools, but it was going to be ecumenical. I mean, everybody gets to come. Well, I don't think he counted on Satan worshipers. Okay, Lucian, now just to restate your position, initially your position is that none of these religious displays should be on public, you know, governmental property. But if the government's going to allow one religious display, then it should allow all of those displays, including yours. And that's just simply the way that you all look at the Establishment Clause issue.
Yeah, and not only should they allow all, others should see it as their duty to come forward and make sure that they are there. And I feel like to do so changes the message of the type of forum. It's similar to the case with the activity books in Florida. And I'm not sure if you're aware of that, but...
Oh, I'm very aware of that. In fact, I want one of those Satan coloring books. I think I deserve a free copy since we're doing this interview.
Yeah, we do. You do.
Okay, well, then you need to send me one because I want to put a picture on my Facebook page.
They're selling well at Skepticon here. They're a big hit, and I've been signing those as we go along. But
take us back, if you would. What was the beginning of this?
Actually, it was now we're getting to a point where secular organizations for the separation of church and state are recognizing the value in what the Satanic Temple is doing. And they're recognizing the value of using us as a second line attack against breaches of the separation of church and state to ensure that plurality is respected. And that was the case in Florida. The Orange County public schools over there were allowing the passive distribution of religious literature, which amounted to one evangelical group going in and distributing Bibles and other Christian literature. The atheists tried to come in through the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and at first the school board rejected their materials, said it was disruptive or offensive or whatever else. Freedom From Religion Foundation sued, and then I believe the school board backed down, said they would accept whatever material they needed to. This was an open forum after all. And so it was Freedom From Religion Foundation that reached out to the Satanic Temple and apprised us of the situation and said that there is this open forum. And I don't think anybody really believed that it was intended to be an open forum, and that the thinking was that they could encroach this religious material into a public school with the claim that it was an open forum, feeling comfortable in the idea that other groups wouldn't come to be represented beyond maybe the atheists. So, of course, the Satanic Temple applied to distribute satanic literature in the schools. And so there was kind of this question we had of what kind of material will we give out at schools? And we're really quite opposed to the idea of proselytization or indoctrination. So we didn't make anything that was really heavy-handed philosophically or anything like that. We just wanted something that could have a presence in the school and be known as something made by the Satanic Temple, something that was satanic. And we put together just a benign but pro-social book of activities, including word searches, a maze, a little coloring section, and we turned that in for their approval. And the school board seemed to be having difficulty with how they would.
What is the title of this Satan activity book?
The Satanic Big Book of Activities.
I'm sorry.
When I first saw this, I couldn't help laughing. And now you're telling me that the Orange County School Board had a little bit of heartburn over this book?
Well, they were. You could see their confusion when they were addressing the press, because they were trying to allay the fears of parents and the rest of the community, who obviously didn't want anything satanic in the schools. They didn't care what the material was. They were falling back on this rhetoric about how the approval was up to them. You know, they were talking about how they had the right to deny our material if they saw fit, which was only true up into a point. They still couldn't engage in viewpoint discrimination. They were free to deny our request if they could find anything vulgar, pornographic, or inciting hatred or violence in our material. And obviously they could not. So they were really quite stuck with approving our stuff if they were going to go forward with the open forum. As it turns out, they had a meeting recently and they decided to call off the open forum that was supposed to be scheduled for January. And they strongly indicated that they're going to kill their open forum policy altogether.
So ultimately, you and the Freedom From Religion Foundation got what the foundation had originally asked for, which was the removal of all of these religious articles, publications from the public schools.
Yes, it was interesting to see that after 3 years of Freedom From Religion Foundation fighting this, we came in and ultimately got that result. And then the chairman of the school board had this long-delayed epiphany that finally came to him and said that religious materials really don't have any place in the schools and is more a matter of something in the household or a personal issue that really shouldn't be proselytized in schools. So it was interesting to see that kind of conversion this man had in light of all this.
That reminds me of a posting that I just read from a recent one on your Facebook page. You had linked to an article by a conservative Christian pastor, I think, and the point he was making was that the First Amendment only protects Christianity. It doesn't protect other religious denominations or other religious traditions. And I think that was the position of the people in Orange County, or at least it was up until this administrator had this recent epiphany. Could you comment on that particular argument? Do you have any response when people say that the First Amendment is only for Christians?
Obviously, that's wrong. He wrote, this is Brian Fisher you're talking about, and
yes.
He has a radio talk program called Focal Point, and I guess it's also aired as a video thing on Sky Angel Network. So, you know, he's a very Christian, I think, evangelical variety. And the article he wrote was called "If First Amendment Isn't Just About Christianity, We Have to Allow Satanism." And he seems so close to the proper point. It's just that the word shouldn't be "if." It should be "because the First Amendment isn't just about Christianity, we have to allow Satanism." But I actually have here a line. I was interested in that, and I printed it up and actually brought it up at my Skepticon presentation. He wrote, But because low information educators have so mangled our history and activist judges have so mangled our Constitution, most Americans, even educated ones, do not understand this basic fact about the First Amendment, that by the word religion in the First Amendment, the founders meant only the various expressions of Christianity. And I like to defer to quotes by Jefferson when he wrote the Statute for Religious Liberty in Virginia. And he was really proud of this statute. He even had it engraved on his tombstone, not the text of it, but the fact that he was the author of it. And I believe amongst his three achievements he had listed on his tombstone, he failed to mention that he was president, but he mentioned this one. He was talking about, I don't have the exact quote, but he was talking about how religious opinion should in no way be regulated in such a way that it shall expand or diminish somebody's civic capabilities. And in his memoirs, he made clear that in this statute, he felt that religious opinion covered Jews, Hindus, Mohammedans, I think was the word he used back then, and even infidels, which is important for our case.
Are you talking about Jefferson now or about Justice Story?
Jefferson.
Yeah.
Jefferson.
Because I believe...
Well, you're right. It was Joseph Story, but it seems like the... who Brian Fisher bases his argument off of. But it seems like the crux of that argument is that back in these medieval times of the revolution and the formation of the United States, the founding fathers were so ignorant of the rest of the world that they couldn't really conceive of other religions or other religious groups being represented in the United States. And there's just no shortage of material to give the lie to that. It's just completely wrong. It's entirely false. And I don't think that argument will ever be taken seriously in a court of law. I think Brian Fisher is just, writing for his audience. But I don't think that's a serious argument that we have to spend too much time on ourselves.
Yeah, it's remarkable how frequently this argument comes up. And so I was I went back and looked at the particular referenced discussion article by commentary by Justice Story. And he was, for people who aren't familiar with him, he was, in fact, a member of the United States Supreme Court in the early 19th century, back when I think they had about 7 members on the court. He was most famous, actually, as a constitutional commentator. And he was very prominent. He probably was the most prominent constitutional commentator in the 19th century. But as I was looking at what was written there, I mean, there are a couple of responses to the argument that the pastor was making. And the first is that as one of only 7 members of the court, Justice Story, he didn't determine the court's policy. And the court itself has never actually held that the First Amendment protects only Christianity. The second comment is that if you actually read his commentary, you'll see that he himself, the pastor took his comment out of context. Justice Story himself makes it abundantly clear that the religion clauses protect what he referred to as Mohammedans, we would say Muslims today, or Jews, or even people who are of no religion. And that's actually pretty easy to understand, given that Justice Story himself was, I believe, a Unitarian. So it'd be unlikely that he would see the religion clauses as not protecting his own religious beliefs. Now, on the other hand, I think it's pretty clear that the founders themselves, the actual drafters of the First Amendment, which would have included a number of people, ultimately James Madison and the people who ratified it, they probably did have the interdenominational conflicts between Christians in mind when they wrote the amendment, specifically the conflict that had been raging in England for centuries between Protestants on one side and Catholics on the other, and all the people being burned at the stake and being killed and hanged and all sorts of terrible tortures being inflicted upon them. But the fact that that was their particular memory and that was the particular thing that they were thinking of when they drafted the amendment doesn't mean in any sense that they were restricting the amendment to that particular conflict. In fact, if they'd wanted to do that, it was a very simple way to do it. They could have inserted the word Christian in the First Amendment or elsewhere in the Constitution, and they didn't do that.
Right, right, exactly. And at what point does it become pointless to even insist that the religion has the label of Christianity on it to begin with? Because within the spectrum of Christianity, you can find diametrically opposed views from different sects, of course, to the point where it's unrecognizable as the same religion. And somebody brought that up in reply to Brian Fisher's article and was saying, well, then the thing to do you know, if somebody was trying to really test this out, is come up with some bizarre and completely deplorable manifestation of what you call Christianity and fight for its place within this all, which I think would be kind of a pointless exercise. Not only that, but I think the idea of Christianity put forward in the religious agenda of, say, our Tea Party Republicans and its bizarre adherence to Ayn Rand's objectivism and the Christianization of that. And where does it come to the point where we ask, how does this actually correlate to biblical text or teachings of Jesus, these kind of communistic teachings that we have? Throughout history, we've had it shown that when something becomes considered generally immoral, that it's then defined as unchristian. While you had a lot of Christian organizations and churches arguing in the United States to keep slavery afloat, you know, then it becomes, I think, generally accepted amongst Christians that Christianity is anti-slavery, even though it's quite easy for atheists and other critics to point out passages from the Bible that say entirely otherwise. So this argument that you're only defending Christianity, it just seems a little pointless to me from the outset. It's absurd.
To Weekly Constitutional, I'm Stuart Harris, and I'm speaking with Lucian Greaves of the Satanic Temple, all about the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. And as you might guess, Lucian doesn't think that it was only intended to protect Christianity. After the break, we'll finish up our discussion with Lucian Greaves. Stay tuned.
Hey, who joined this murdering? Nobody knows, but the good book says they got to read just what they told. Boxing on is so busy, it's unfortunate.
After an 18-month investigation, the Montpelier Foundation reviewed the findings and concluded that the Madison home had survived largely intact and that it was possible to accurately restore the mansion to its 19th century form. Restoring Montpelier would enable the life and ideas of James Madison to be preserved and presented to the public in a unique way and in the very space the Madisons created during James's presidency. The Montpelier Foundation consulted with the members of the family of William DuPont and received their support and encouragement. And in October 2003, the foundation officially announced that the Montpelier Mansion would be restored. Restoration of the physical structure of Madison's home was deemed officially complete on Constitution Day, September 17, 2008. However, the restoration process never really ends. Historians and curators continue to research and analyze data that gives insight into room use, furnishings, and the Madison's lifestyle. With a Madison Minute, I'm Jim Blaylock.
You're listening to your weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris. If you're a regular listener, you've probably heard our earlier episodes with a fellow by the name of Lucian Greaves of the Satanic Temple. We actually had two episodes earlier this year where we talked about the controversy over putting a statue of Baphomet, that's a variation on Lucifer, on the steps of the Oklahoma State House. This is now our Satan update, and we're talking about the more recent adventures of the Satanic Temple. And it turns out they've been doing stuff all over the country, from Florida to maybe even Alaska.
Oh, what did I do in Alaska now?
Or maybe it was just something I read on your Facebook page about a city council up there that said it was willing to accept satanic prayers for the invocation.
Actually, that didn't require action on our part.
Oh, I thought you and your minions were behind that.
No, actually, it was just the question had come up. I think it was some other secular group posed the question and said, you know, would you be willing to accept Satanism and whatever other atheists and Satanism or something like that? I know Satanists were lumped in, and originally somebody over there, the head of the city council in whatever town it was, or somebody of that magnitude, I guess, in authority, said, absolutely not, that has nothing to do with this. And then amidst criticism, rescinded those comments and said, oh, of course, we would have to accept them. He realizes that now. But I feel like we can take some credit for that kind of thing, because I think we're the reason this question comes up more and more. And we're the really credible illustration of how this happens. Before, I feel it was very hypothetical. You know, and 3 years ago, when Orange County was allowing for the passive distribution of evangelical materials, the Freedom From Religion Foundation could ask them, well, are you ready to bow to the wishes of Wiccans, Satanists, or whoever else? And they could feel confident that they weren't actually going to come and ask for that equal representation. But now we are.
Well, you certainly seem to have gotten lots and lots of attention. And I must confess that back when we had our first conversations, back when we talked last spring about the Oklahoma statute controversy. I really sort of questioned your decision to adopt Satanism as your calling card. And I realize that you don't actually believe in Satan as an entity, that this is a symbol for you all, that's an atheistic religious practice. But I question that because, of course, there are lots of people who really do believe in Satan as an evil entity and who are clearly going to take great offense at your very existence and almost anything you do in the name of Satan or satanic this or that. But on the other hand, it really does seem that you've gotten more attention than other groups who are trying to do the same thing. And the one that comes to mind is the so-called Pastafarians, the ones who invented this concept of a flying spaghetti monster. They've had some successes, but you really seem to be the one in the forefront at the moment.
Well, and not only that, you'll find that with what we're doing, it's despite the fact that people question its legitimacy as a religion or as a parody of religion or a massive prank or whatever else, whatever people might think, to a lot of people who are coming to us now, it's functioning as a religion. And I say that even though these people understand the anti-supernaturalist, atheistic aspect of what we're doing, for the most part, these are people who came out of religion and they came out usually from strict fundamentalist upbringings. So this satanic iconography really means something to them, this symbolism, and being able to embrace that, they feel, is very liberating. And it's not because they want to engage in anti-human, heinous activities. It's because they see what they feel are moral failings in the religious indoctrination that they had. People who do stand for gay marriage and general equality and recognition of different marginalized outgroups and that kind of acceptance. They see that with us, and they don't see that with a lot of the religious organizations they came out from. And with us now, they're networking and they have a sense of community. And we've started opening up chapter houses across the nation where they can work on a local level with these kinds of activities we do and see whatever kind of community they create from their chapter houses. And we have a girl running a chapter in Seattle. She did a interview with the Seattle News, and she was talking about coming out of addiction and these kinds of things. And the Satanism espoused by the Satanic Temple to her gives a context and meaning to her life and helps her out from that pit of addiction and that type of thing. So I think it really gives credibility to the idea that you can have an atheistic religion and those values are just as deeply held as any other religious structure and just as deserving of any privilege of or exemption that might come from that.
So it's not just an attention-getting device.
No, I think it really helps people, and I'm hoping as this goes on, it helps our culture in general to mitigate this kind of witch hunting thinking, to realize that these symbolic crimes that they've created are only symbolic, and people have completely differing opinions on what these things mean, and they can still be constructive and still engage in the dialogue, and they're not working to undermine the moral fabric of the nation or the world, in that this conspiracy of Satanists that we were told existed during the height of the Satanic Panic was never really there at all.
You know, it's rather interesting. I was thinking about this. The Gospels describe Jesus as someone who hung around a bunch of outsiders, people like very poor people, prostitutes, tax collectors, the lowest of the low. He very much adopted an outsider strategy. In a strange way, you seem to be following his lead. You have adopted a persona, or you've adopted a symbol that is the ultimate outsider.
And I've been writing about this. I've decided I'll write a book, and I was talking about that kind of inversion of values that comes along with that. And I think that's why from the outset I had said that one of the strongest metaphors that we use in this context was Anatole France's Revolt of the Angels. And it's such a beautiful and clever book. I think it was written 1920s, 1930s. But in any case, it's about these angels decide they want to find Satan and rekindle the war on heaven, because Jehovah's gotten weak, complacent, and tyrannical, and tired and old, and they can defeat him. And to make a long story short, they go and they find Satan, and they say they want to take up the war on heaven, and Jehovah's all these things and can't possibly stand up to it now. He doesn't even know what's going on earth, and they will easily crush him. And Satan meditates on this for a time and decides that he doesn't want to do it. He has a dream that shows how this unfolds. Him and his armies go and they defeat Jehovah, and then years on down the line, Satan is becoming cold and uncompassionate and detached from humanity and really kind of addicted to his own power and praise and demands absolute fealty or eternal damnation. And so the process just continues, and he decides he would prefer to always be the outsider reigning in hell rather than serving in heaven or even a master in heaven, but be among humankind and be among the arts and that kind of thing. So I think that kind of speaks to what we're doing. It's always meant to be a marginalized kind of thing. We never want to be one of those exclusive groups that's trying to assimilate everybody and indoctrinating everybody just the same, recognizing that this isn't for everybody and not all things are, and that we need to work with other people to realize what works to keep us all a cohesive civilization.
Oh, yeah. That reminds me. Shortly after we spoke last spring, the Supreme Court issued its Hobby Lobby opinion. And that was not technically a constitutional case. It certainly involved religious freedom, but it involved a federal statute called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which is very complicated. And I'm not going to get down in the weeds on that particular case, but I will say that the general rule that seemed to come out of Hobby Lobby was that if you or I object to a federal statute that we believe in some way would require us to violate our religious scruples, that we've got a very good chance of getting an exemption from that law. And that seems to be the tack that you all have been taking, more on a state level than on the federal level. But could you comment on that? Is that, in fact, the strategy that you've devised?
Yeah, we already had this in the works before Hobby Lobby. So Hobby Lobby was just kind of fortuitous around the time we were rolling this out so that we could incorporate it in and strengthen our argument. But we were looking at different little weasel bills being put forward in different states to try to make it more difficult to get abortions. And one of those bills passed in several states. I forget the number now, but it's a significant number. They had what they called informed consent laws. And what that really meant was that women who were trying to get an abortion were subjected to state-mandated informational material, whether it be making them look at pictures of fetuses and trying to make an already difficult decision even harder. They would also give them scientifically unsound medical information claiming that there was a link between abortion and breast cancer, for instance, which is absolutely not proven, but they were allowed to put it forward anyway. And this is state material. This isn't actual medical material. This is really politically biased material. And we see that we have a tenet. We had a pre-existing tenet that says all our decisions should be made by the best available scientific evidence, and we should never work to conform the scientific evidence to our beliefs. It should be the other way around. And so on those grounds, we felt that we could claim a religious exemption for women from this state-mandated material. And the fear there was that we would have to maybe prove that this material wasn't medically sound. And I thought that might be a hard battle to fight. But then what we saw in Hobby Lobby was an important aspect of that was that Hobby Lobby claimed that it was their religious belief that categorized certain pharmaceuticals as abortifacients when in fact they were not. So we then felt that we were completely at liberty to simply put forward that we believe that this state mandated material is false, and therefore we don't feel that women who hold to our tenets should be subjected to it. Now, we're able to expand our exemptions, we feel, to things like transvaginal ultrasounds, these invasive ultrasounds that are subjected to women in certain cases in different states. But that one got, the informed consent got a lot of publicity, of course, because people were able to run headlines like Satanists use leverage Hobby Lobby to their advantage kind of thing.
And it's not really Hobby Lobby itself. It's the idea that's behind Hobby Lobby, which again, if the state is going to require you to do something that you feel violates your religious convictions, that chances are you can get an exemption from that state law.
Right, exactly. So we're yet to have somebody actually take us up on these exemptions. Like, we've also put out an exemption form for children in the 19 states where they still allow corporal punishment. And corporal punishment is really a problem. These kids can be severely beaten in such a way that if their parents were to do the same, they'd be charged with a felony. And one of our tenets holds that the body is inviolable, subject to one's own will alone. And on those grounds, we feel that kids who believe in that tenet should be exempted from getting beaten and punitive beatings in school. And those are legal battles that we can only fight, obviously, when somebody signs those forms and their wishes aren't respected.
You got to have a case. You got to have a plaintiff. Exactly.
Right. But I think we'll see. We're bound to see that play out eventually.
Yeah, that always struck me as the central problem with Hobby Lobby. I'm not talking about the particular case itself. You can believe that these contraceptives at issue here were good or bad, or people should have to pay for them or not have to pay for them. But the essential idea there is this idea that you should be able to get some sort of exemption from a governmental requirement based upon your religious beliefs. Because once you do that for one group of people, where does it end? I could make lots of arguments about lots of religious beliefs that people wouldn't necessarily want to give me accommodations for.
Arians saying that they didn't have to pay taxes based on Hobby Lobby.
Oh, I feel very strongly that I shouldn't be required to pay taxes because I just recently had an epiphany to that effect.
Yeah. Right. And what's to stop you there?
I think I'm going to file a lawsuit.
You honestly think you're going to file a lawsuit?
No. I'm sorry. I'm just funning with you. Say, it's about time for us to go. So if people want to follow you and your activities, where's the best place for them to find you?
Well, our website is thesatanictemple.com. And, of course, you can always find us on Facebook. And if you're interested in helping us fund any of our campaigns, you might think about buying any of our merchandise at shopsatan.com, because those proceeds go towards our hefty legal bills in our campaigns.
Shopsatan.com. But if we shop there, we'll go to hell, won't we?
Maybe. It's the risk you're going to have to take.
Well, let me end by wishing you a very Merry Christmas.
You know, I'm all for Christmas. I was just talking at Skepticon how I feel like somebody asked me about warring on Christmas, and I said, no, I think Christmas should be Satanized.
And that's our show. Thanks so very much to Lucian Greaves of the Satanic Temple. As always, he is provocative and fascinating. And by the way, just a reminder, we've already done two episodes with him before. They're called The Devil Went Down to Oklahoma, Parts 1 and 2. They're available on iTunes. And this, of course, will be up on iTunes about a week after we broadcast it. So please check us out on the internet. Just Google Your Weekly Constitutional. You'll come up with our website, with our podcast site, all that good stuff. Our executive producer is Wayne Winkler. Our distribution engineers are Bob Hoffman and Chad Barrett. Our scheduler is Carol Hutchinson. And our music is by the Watauga Fife and Drum Corps. My name is Stuart Harris. And remember, you are a part of the American experiment.